This is an ABC podcast. True Cult
with Alex Bonniewell. He's been described as a true iconoclast and independent. He was a director who could get high-profile actors to appear in his very low-budget films. But it was writing which gave Larry Cohen his first break into show business. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the work of the late US director Larry Cohen, his work spans everything from B-grade horror films to blaxploitation to writing the script for Phone Booth, which did spark a bidding war and would later be made by director Joel Schumacher, starring Colin Farrell. And it's for all of these reasons that True Cult with Alex Bonniewell is taking a look back at the films of the late Larry Cohen, director, writer and producer. Now, Alex, what was it about Larry Cohen that had you coming back time and time again for his films?
Larry Cohen, he had a big place in my movie watching heart. If his name was on a video cassette, I'd watch it because I knew it wouldn't be a typical horror or cult movie. It'll be something very different because he would take ideas from all over the place. We've covered some of his films on previous True Cults movies like The Stuff, Cue the Winged Serpent, It's Alive, as well as Maniac Cop, which he also wrote. He was quite prolific. He would write, produce, he would direct. He died on March the 23rd of this year. So it just seemed like a good time to go back and check out some of his other movies.
And Alex, if we are starting with those films of Larry Cohen, where were you going to start tonight?
We were going right back to 1973, to Black Caesar.
A king of crime is born. A mob boss who started in the streets, ready to do anything for a payoff, no matter what it cost. He became an overlord of the underworld with every trick in the book.
You forget, huh? You make fools of your people. You shame them. They kill you. You do this to me after I gave you your chance. Who else I'm going to do it to, huh?
Fred Williamson, in the private war of an angry man, whose hate was spelled out in the blood of his enemies, his violence in the curses of his women. Black Caesar.
That's actually how the trailer ended. I didn't even edit any of that, Alex. And that is just, it just went from a bit of sort of blaxploitation soundtrack to dun-da-da-da.
I love the not quite suitable Jimi Hendrix-ish riff in that as well. It's like, I will just change two notes. We won't get sued. It'll be fine.
I also love that Larry Cohen let his house be used for part of the scenes in this, where they take over a house and there's people in the pool. And apparently he was saying he was picking up bits of turkey and things off his lawn for about 8 months after.
Of course he did it in his house. It would have saved him money. That's the thing about people like Larry Cohen. They do things for as tight a budget as they can and then make as much money off it as they possibly can. Anyway, back to the movie, Black Caesar, 1973. So this stars Fred Williamson, who's been around forever. He was like in episodes of the original Star Trek. He was in the MASH movie. He was most recently, he played Frost in From Dusk Till Dawn. But in this, he's dapper Harlem gangster Tommy Gibbs. Tommy grew up on the streets, dodging gangs, cops, while shining shoes. And this is where he meets his future nemesis, McKinney, and real nasty racist cop who makes himself known to young Tommy by breaking his leg. Flash forward, and Tommy has all grown up and he's now a force to be reckoned with in Harlem's underworld. So much so that he thinks it's time to take on the mafia and carve out a nice little piece of New York to control, that obviously being Harlem. And he's pretty cocksure, arrogant, and above all fearless in his acquisition of power. And all the while fighting against the racist police force, the racist underworld, and the racist straight world. And although Tommy is a very likable rogue for the most part, he still has a very nasty streak in him, especially with his treatment of his reluctant girlfriend Helen, played by Gloria Hendry, who is also in my favourite Bond film, Live and Let Die, but she was also in Black Belt Jones, Savage Sisters, and Pumpkinhead 2. And he treats her appallingly. So this was filmed at the height of the blaxploitation era. These were films that were general kind of exploitation genre, like crime, horror, violence, but with all the central characters being African-American. And they were predominantly aimed at an African-American audience. But they gained massive popularity across all racial divides, and even the major studios got into the act with films like Shaft, and even Let Them Live Die could be kind of the Bond blaxploitation entry. Anyway, this is a great gangster movie regardless of its subgenre, and it's a classic rise and fall with Williamson delivering plenty of swagger with his criminal charm. And of course, you've got a really strong soundtrack from James Brown in it. I like gangster movies. I like exploitation movies. I like Larry Cohen movies. So you put them all together and you've got a great combination of stuff. Williamson is great in this is Tommy as the gangster wanting to have it all and stick it to the man at the same time, regardless of whether that's the police, white straight society, or the mafia. Really awesome film. This spawned a sequel, Hell Up in Harlem, which I've yet to see, but it's on my list. If you were wanting to get into kind of blaxploitation era movies, this is a really cool place to start. I think it's probably one of the better ones because it's much more sympathetic towards the African-American actors. Some of the blaxploitation stuff just uses African-American actors just as an excuse to kind of put a spin on whatever they're doing and try and aim it at a different audience, but they are still very much exploitation movies. This is a genuinely good gangster movie in its own right.
Yeah, and I think he mentions that even though most people think of it as a blaxploitation film, that for him, it was his chance to make his gangster film.
Yeah, absolutely. And he does a really, really good job at it as well. I mean, it's like, I can't remember if this is before Godfather. It's got to be around the same sort of time. So, you know, kind of, This is why I like Larry Cohen. He will take ideas from all over the place and mash them together and then just produce something that is just very Larry Cohen that no one else really could have made.
Yeah, I think Godfather was 1972.
Right, okay. So, yeah, these films are, like, made very quickly. So they would have got an idea, done the script, filmed it and got it out within months. These sort of films don't take years to make. So, which is, again, part of their charm. It's like there's a very massively quick turnaround on stuff like this. So everyone has to go, right, we're doing this. This is what we're doing. There'd be a limited number of takes. They'll just take the best one. The scripts would be very kind of, there it goes. Off you go. Do your stuff. And it'd be up to the actors to put their spin on it and make it a better film, which is what Williamson does in this.
Alex, it could have been a totally different film if Sammy Davis Jr. had taken the role that Fred Williamson ended up playing, but I did watch a little clip of Larry Cohen talking about the making of this film and that they did film without permits in different parts of New York, but that when it came to any of the stunts that Fred had to do, he wasn't convinced unless Larry did it first. So there's bits, obviously, where Fred rolls out of a cab, Larry had to roll out of the cab first, and then Fred was like, okay, I'll do it.
That's excellent. Yeah. But, you know, again, that filming without permits, something Larry Cohen did all the time. He did it for Cue the Winged Serpent. For Cue the Winged Serpent, he had people in police uniforms with machine guns firing into the sky. They'd be filming in New York and the cops would come up to him and go, where are your permits? And he'd have some lackey kind of guy, like a runner, going, oh, I'll just ask Mr. Cohen where they are, and just kind of wandering off and wandering around and coming back and said, they've been sent to the city and stuff, and we haven't got copies with us here, and keeping them talking while they filmed the scene. And then by the time they finished the scene, they'd pack them and said, oh, we're done now for the day. Thanks for keeping an eye on us, guys. Thank you. And then they'd pack up and go away. So they'd never really ask for permission to do anything, which I think is fantastic. This is how you should make films.
Alex, you mentioned before that this is a director who directly really impacted what you watched growing up. But in terms of the films that you have picked to talk about when it comes to Larry Cohen, I mean, what sorts of things were you trying to pick in terms of the breadth and depth of the work that he's done?
All the films I've picked tonight, they're all very different movies. I mean, we've got like the gangster film with Black Caesar. We've got kind of straight up horror, conspiracy theory stuff. You know, he wasn't afraid to like step outside of what you thought would be his mainstay. I mean, I found him through horror movies, through like Cue the Winged Serpent and The Stuff and Maniac Cop and things like that. But then when I would venture outside of that, I realised that he made films, even though they were all low budget and kind of in the exploitation mould, they were all very different. He could do very different subject matters and stuff. One of them we'll get onto later, God Told Me To, is just so out there. It's brilliant. But I think next we're going to, is it The Ambulance? from 1990.
Let's take a listen to this one. Yeah. I think this trailer is one of my favourites, Alex.
A killer is loose in New York City.
Somebody call an ambulance, okay?
Will you look at this computer printout? All on missing persons reports in the last 2 weeks.
This is for Lieutenant.
What exactly do you think happened?
I don't know.
Did you do something to that girl yourself? Are you one of those psychopaths who kills girls and goes to the police to tell stories?
It picks up New Yorkers and they're never seen or heard from again. A vehicle of mercy that's really a murder machine.
Eric Roberts. James Earl Jones. The ambulance. If you call for help, you're dead.
See what I mean, Alex? If you call for help, you're dead.
Oh, what an awesome tagline. So this is from 1990. Josh Baker, played by Eric Roberts, is a comic artist for Marvel Comics in New York. Cue one of the first cameos by Stan Lee in a movie. Josh and his glorious mullet are trying to chat up the mysterious woman he sees every day walking past him, being Cheryl, played by Jeanine Turner. She really doesn't want anything to do with him. She's quite snarky and self-aware and just, you know, thinks he's just like, you know, just some bloke just trying to chat her up. Anyway, while he's kind of getting to know her and she's kind of going, yeah, all right, okay, yeah, maybe, I don't know, she collapses and he's whisked away in an old-style ambulance. No, kind of like the Ghostbusters car. That's what it looks like. It's like that kind of old ambulance, the long, low American ambulances. Now, Josh thinks he should go and check all the hospitals to see if she's there and see if she's okay, and can't find her, and he starts to suspect that something strange might be going on. Of course it is. There's an evil doctor picking up New Yorkers and taking them to a secret hospital to experiment on them. The police are next to useless, and James Earl Jones, the fantastic James Earl Jones, is a rather eccentric lieutenant, and Megan Gallagher is a ballsy police officer called Sandra Malloy, and she decides to kind of help Josh try and find this mysterious woman who's disappeared. And of course, other people are disappearing as well. This is super fun. It's got a pretty usual genre subplot. So you've got boy meets girl, girl goes missing, useless cops, evil doctors, strange cars, but some amazing car stunts in this. There was one at the end of the movie where I just sat there just watching it and going, whoa, I'd forgotten they'd done this in this movie. Stuff that you just won't see in films now. Stuff that you just kind of go, my, that could have ended in some severe injury, if not death. Yeah, and again, this is the reason why I love films like this. When I was watching stuff like this, you'd have a lot of real stunts. There was no CGI, no green screens to do stuff. So things had to be done for real. And you got very used to seeing it. And you kind of go, oh, that was kind of cool. Revisiting them, like nearly 30 years later, and watching them, you kind of go, wow, that was just off the chart. You wouldn't be caught dead trying to do that in a Hollywood movie now, because there's so many safety restrictions and stuff, and they go and use a green screen, or they use CGI, or they use some different techniques. So going back and watching, even though they're kind of cheesy B-movies, there's still stuff in them that makes you sit there and go, wow, how did they pull that off? Who sat there and thought, well, if we do this, you stay up there, and we're going to get this car and drive it through this thing here, and then you're going to jump out of the way and not fall off that. You know, you just don't get that anymore in this kind of level of movie anyway. Yeah, just great to watch.
Well, Alex, I mean, I think that's one of the best things about rewatching films like this is that you have a better appreciation of just how hard it would have been to do some of the things that you see in them, or, you know, some of those practical effects, the way that they were doing things back in the day. And you kind of think, well, it might be a little bit cheesy, but gee, I definitely respect the work that went into that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like the films of this kind of era, especially from the sort of early 80s to the mid 90s, say, when it was like, what are we going to do? How can we make this stand out from things? Well, what if we do this? And you can imagine just looking at it. Are you crazy? Oh, no. I know a super crazy stunt crew that will do this. And they go, all right, then. Let's give it a go. And they do. I mean, again, this is the reason why I loved all those early Jackie Chan movies, because the stunts were insane and they were incredibly cheesy plots. The acting wasn't the best, but the stunts were incredible. The ambulance has better acting and a slightly better plot than some of those early kind of Hong Kong movies, but the stunts are still just totally out there. And I kind of look at it, watching it, going, I'd really like one of those ambulances. They just look like cool vehicles.
Oh, yeah, that ambulance is, what is it? It's like, it's a Cadillac, isn't it?
I don't know, but yeah, it's got that kind of feel to it, that kind of like long and low kind of thing. And of course, it's painted in like bright blood red. So
yours be bright blood red, Alex?
Of course it would. Either that or matte black, you know, maybe I'll have two.
Just get two. Yeah. Alex, do you remember where you were when you saw the ambulance?
Oh, I would have been at home because I found the VHS in my garage because I bought all my movies over from the UK. So I re-bought this on Blu-ray so I could re-watch it again. But I found the VHS in my garage. So I must have been at home with a bunch of friends just watching B-movies on a Friday or Saturday night at some point. So, yeah, it would have been something like that. Or I don't think I rented the ambulance. I think I found it on VHS and bought it on VHS to have in my collection. So, yeah, it would have probably been mid-90s I probably saw it.
I feel like you had a very interesting set of friends during this time for those people that were coming around watching VHS with you or going to said cinemas with you.
I had a better collection than any of the video libraries near me. So I had friends coming round going, can we borrow a couple of films? I was like, yeah. So I had a big list of who borrowed what film. And if I didn't get it back in a couple of weeks, I'd kind of ring them and go, can I have my films back, please? And they go, oh, yeah, sorry. Or it would just be like, we'd be out all night at clubs or at gigs and stuff. And then like four or five of us would just go back to my house and we'd just watch horror movies till like four, five, six in the morning. Or people would come and go, what's the most outrageous film you've got? And I go, are you sure? And they're like, yes. And I scarred a couple of friends by showing them some pretty grim movies back in the mid-90s, that stuff that you couldn't get hold of because it was banned. But I somehow managed to. So have you got Cannibal Ferox? Yes. Can we watch it? Are you sure? Yeah, you haven't slept for 24 hours. Are you sure you want to watch this? Yeah. Okay, I'll just get a cup of tea and some cake and we'll watch it. Because I didn't drink alcohol, so I could only offer tea and cake for people.
Oh, well, you're quite hospitable. I would have been happy with tea and cake, Alex.
I'd kind of get these like, what? Have you got anything else? No, go and have a look in the fridge and there'd just be a huge cake in there. And they go, all right, we'll have tea and cake and watch cannibal movies. That was kind of like my life for a good few years, going out, staying up all night, driving everyone home because I had a van and I didn't drink. So I could drive everyone home and drop them off, or I could just go, oh, who wants to watch a movie? But, yeah, okay. Yeah, and one time, the first time a Texan band called the Evil Mothers came to the UK to tour, and my band at the time, Leech Woman, toured with them. We had a day or two before we went anywhere, and I was like, right, okay, pick a movie. And they just looked at my collection and went, whoa, what should we watch? Whatever you want. And I remember them picking Scum off the shelf and going, what's this? And I go, sit down. And then afterwards, they were just like, what the hell? I said, you've learnt a lot of new English slang with this movie. And that was it for the rest of the tour. They would just be using words that they'd learnt from Scum. So, yeah, I think I influenced a few people.
Well, Alex, I don't know how true this is, but the ambulance did have a small cameo of Donald Trump in it, but it was a deleted scene. And I'm wondering how John Travolta would have gone, because he was originally considered for the lead that Eric Roberts ended up getting. So I'm wondering what that would have been like.
See, you always find out these amazing facts about movies that are just completely whiz past me. So it's like, yeah, I can't imagine John Travolta being in it. Mind you, it was 1990, so he would have been trying to find films that he could just be in to just get his name out there, I suppose, because he hadn't done his kind of return to form via Pulp Fiction by then. I'm not sure he would have been able to pull it off, because like Eric Roberts plays Josh in a kind of weird kind of happy-go-lucky kind of way, because he's a comic artist. He's got to be a bit, he can't be too serious about stuff. I don't know if John Travolta would have taken it a bit too serious or not. Not sure. But yeah, I like Josh and his mullet in this. It made me happy. I just rewatching it again, going, wow, that's a serious mullet you got there, Josh. It's like you're a bit at 1990. That should have gone by then. But you know, good for you for keeping on to hold of it.
Well, having just done a sneaky search, Alex, John Travolta was either doing Look Who's Talking or Look Who's Talking To. Now, when it comes to this next film, Why did this one make your list in terms of those films that you really wanted to talk about in terms of the work of Larry Cohen?
This one took me years to find. I'd read about it and I just couldn't find it. I ended up picking this up on DVD in New York probably about 20 years ago because I just could never find it on VHS. This is God Told Me To from 1976.
On December 25th, 1953, a child is born. A virgin birth. Tomorrow, all civilization will tremble under his almighty power. He must be obeyed.
Sacrifices to your God are nothing new.
Are you going to tell me all those people are meant to die?
Why did you attack all those people?
God told me to.
God told me to.
Alex, I didn't know what to make of that trailer, but I thought it was pretty epic.
it's very much like the film as a whole. This was one of the hardest Larry Cohen films for me to track down and actually watch. And it's a really, really out there movie. Proper conspiracy theory stuff before such things really existed. So there's been this outbreak of seemingly random killings in New York. You start off with a sniper on a water tower. You have a beloved father killing his entire family. A cop opening fire on his police brothers during a St. Patrick's Day parade. And the only thing they have in common is that when approached after the fact and talked to, they're incredibly calm and they just utter the phrase, well, God told me to. And now the investigating detective, Peter Nicholas, played by Tony LoBianco, this is very disturbing to him because he's a very devout Catholic and he can't believe that God would ever tell people to kill people. So he's having a hard time trying to get his head around this and what's happening. Coupled with this, there seems to be this odd religious cult happening at the same time in New York, which seems it might be connected, but he's not sure. And the more he investigates and the deeper he goes into it, it starts getting very odd and very strange. And there might be some extraterrestrial things going on as well. And he's not sure who his real mother was because he was adopted. And he starts to find out that maybe he found his real mother, but he's not sure. And it just gets crazier and crazier. This is one of those hidden gems from the 70s, which you think starts off as like a standard cop film. But then it veers off into this kind of complete sci-fi religious cult weirdness that only 70s cinema kind of had. As I said, this is one of Larry Cohen's lesser seen films, but I think it's also one of his best films because it takes such bizarre subject matter and spins this really cool story and tries to bring it all together into a cohesive narrative. It's just great watching this again because the first time I watched this was when I bought it, which was like 20 odd years ago. So I thought, great, I'll get a chance to dig out God Told Me To again and watch it. And it's just brilliant. It's just so completely out there. Again, you have to look past the low budget, sometimes bad acting, sometimes bad editing, and just kind of just appreciate that this was just trying to push things a little further in storytelling that had at the time you wouldn't see. Now it's like films that remind me of stuff like this, like the more recent Mandy with Nicolas Cage, that to me has a direct link to God Told Me To. Because it's kind of near this kind of weird sci-fi psychedelicness about it. I love the soundtrack on God Told Me To as well. It gets, as you heard from the trailer, it's quite abrasive in places. And again, it's like things like Larry Cohen would think about doing things like that as well and to make the film have a feel to it that you wouldn't necessarily hear in another movie that would try to do the same thing. If you can find this, I don't know who's released it at the moment. Like I say, my DVD's got to be 20 years older. This has to be. It's definitely an out there movie. One for people who want something very different from their cop films, who want it to be taken to the next level of oddness, you know. And if you like stuff like Beyond the Black Rainbow, Mandy, some of the odder David Cronenberg stuff, this kind of slips in there and nestles in with them quite nicely.
Well, Alex, I suppose it doesn't surprise you that he went rogue on this one too and didn't have a permit to film at the St. Patrick's Day Parade, but
no.
Did it anyway.
Yes.
To the point where Andy Kaufman nearly got punched up by the crowd because he was dressed as a police officer antagonising the crowd as part of the film, but the crowd didn't apparently appreciate that. So there were a few that attempted to jump the barriers and beat him up, and Cohen had to hold them back.
I mean, there's stuff in Black Caesar and in God Told Me To, where you know that you've got the actors just walking through New York, especially in Black Caesar. Williamson he's been shot and he's holding his kind of bleeding stomach and he's stumbling through New York and he's got a cameraman in front of him and probably one behind him. And they're just filming it as he's doing it. And the people are the people of New York just looking at him going, oh, there seems to be some black guy who's been shot and they're filming him. But this is weird. And yeah, you kind of get that odd surprised naturalness from the residents of New York as Larry Cohen's directing his actors. And yeah, and in this, the St. Patrick's Day scene is amazing. I mean, the fact they just went and did it. I can't remember if they used some of that footage from St. Patrick's Day scene in Cue the Winged Serpent as well, because there's a St. Patrick's Day, definitely a parade in Cue the Winged Serpent. It might be the 4th of July parade, maybe. I'm not sure. But yeah, notorious for just doing stuff without permission and getting reactions from regular people. And of course, he would never have got people to sign waivers and stuff then, because you just didn't. You just kind of filmed them and went, oh, they'll be in a film, it won't matter. They'll be chuffed if they see themselves on screen. You know, so no permission from anyone. Excellent.
Do you think that because he is a New Yorker and because a lot of his films are set in or around New York, that New York is, I don't know, like an extension of a character in the films that he's done in a way?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's plays a huge role in his movies, especially God Told Me To. You see a lot of New York that you wouldn't see. And again, in Black Caesar, you see a lot of like the really crappy parts of New York that you wouldn't see in other movies. And the ambulance shows a different side of New York. It's just the much more kind of fancier end of town of New York, because our character is an artist in New York, and the Marvel offices would obviously be in a much nicer end of town. So, yeah, he uses the city to ground the movie. So it's like, but we've got told me to, it's in very different locations around the city, depending on how the story's going to go. So I think he utilizes New York in God Told Me To far more than he does in, say, Black Caesar, which is predominantly set around and in Harlem, whereas God Told Me To has a much wider area. But yeah, most definitely, it's, I think it's part of the charm of all these movies. I think it would make a really good watch to see all his films based in New York. So like I say, they just feel like they're in the same universe. And it makes you think that just all this really bizarre stuff just happens in New York all the time.
Well, I mean, that's my thought. If I'd only grown up on Larry Cohen films, that is exactly what I would think, I think. I don't think I'd trust ambulances. I definitely think that there were things in the Chrysler Building with giant nests. Like, yeah. I feel like this is plausible. Alex, I think I just realised why Larry Cohen writes a lot of cops and detectives into his films, because I hadn't realised that he started as a writer on procedural crime shows during the 70s and 60s and 70s. So things like Columbo, The Defenders, The Fugitive. So this makes lots of sense now. Where are we heading for the next instalment of a Larry Cohen film?
Right, so this is from 1978. This is It Lives Again, It's Alive 2.
It's Alive baby is back again, only now there are three of them. It lives again.
Yeah, Alex, that was kind of the shortest one that I could find in terms of trailers for this particular film, because everything else was pretty much just that screaming mutant monster baby for most of the trailer. It just didn't work.
So this is the second in the It's Alive trilogy, the third being Island of the Alive. I know you weren't a particularly fond of the first one, Rihanna.
Oh, it just freaked me out, okay? There are some things that get to me, and then there are other things that I'm fine with, but there was just something about it that just, I just couldn't do it.
But, you know, I can't not enjoy mutant babies on the loose. So how do we up the terror of the first film? By having three pointy tooth and clawed babies to wreak havoc on various doctors and cops and stuff. Frank Davis, played by John P. Ryan, is back. He was the father from the first movie. This time he's trying to help Eugene and Jodie, who he knows are out to give birth to a mutant baby. It, of course, goes horribly wrong as the child is captured by the authorities after a bloody birth in the back of a mobile maternity suite and is placed under surveillance with the two other mutant babies that they've They've also got, like, things are going to get worse, and they do. As you'd expect, three murderous offspring together, it's going to go red all over. The special effects are still done by soon-to-be darling of the FX world, Rick Baker, who did American Werewolf in London and Greystoke. And he was also uncredited on Black Caesar, apparently.
There you go.
Yeah, but this to me is more fun than the first film, but not by much. And it does provide more laughs than revolt, because it's a film about three mutant babies, and they are pretty much solid models that kind of get thrown at people.
Here, catch.
Yeah, pretty much. Holding it to your neck and running around. This sort of stuff reminds me of all the early Tarzan movies I used to watch, when they're like, here, catch this. Alley, crocodile, lion, etc. Hold it to my neck and roll around on the floor. That sort of stuff, which again is I love. And someone off scene throwing blood onto people. This is prime Larry Cohen nuttiness. And it's what made, this is the sort of film that he made that made me go to the video shop and pick up his titles. Like I say, there's not much to say about It's Alive, It's Alive 2. It's a sequel to It's Alive. It's got three mutant babies. Everything goes
wrong. So it's basically just people them die. On the loose. Like, yeah, that's the whole the plot. Okay, yeah, cool.
Pretty much. It's like, but you know, the fact that there was a third sequel to this, I think it's the only time Larry Cohen did sequels to It's Alive, because it had such a cult following. It was like, oh, all right, then I'll make two more films. But which kind of surprised me. I mean, obviously Maniac Cop had sequels, and I'm not sure how involved Larry Cohen was with those. But yeah, I love the It's Alive films. I can't go past those huge head, kind of beady-eyed, fang teeth clawed babies. You have no idea how hard it was for me not to draw big veins on my children's foreheads when they were asleep and take pictures of them, or kind of Photoshop them in with like pointy teeth and stuff, because of films like It's Alive and It Lives Again. Again, this is good, silly B-movie horror. This is kind of the genre I love and go back to. This is stuff, when you try and explain this to people and they kind of look at you and go, you should have grown out of that when you were 15. It's like, no, you can't. You shouldn't. You should never grow out of stuff like this, because it's just so entertaining. It's like, I'm heading towards 50 now and I still love stuff like this. And I still love that people will pay their respects to people like Larry Cohen and produce films that owe a debt to him, and Roger Corman and people like that. They still hark back to that kind of VHS age of horror, where people could just kind of get away with things and do the most outlandish stuff, and it would still turn a profit, and people would still rent it and look. And if the sequel came out, would get excited that there was a sequel to the dreadful B-movie they saw a few years ago. And then you know what it's going to be, but you'll still pick it up and you'll take it home and you'll watch it and enjoy it, and you'll take it back and then hope that maybe they'll make another one somewhere down the line. So yeah, this is what my teenage years were molded by. Films like It's Alive, It's Alive 2, the third It's Alive movie, Cue the Winged Serpent, The Stuff, and all the films that people like Larry Cohen made that made me interested in, because I had no idea when I was watching these that they would be cult movies, and there would be people writing books and essays about them, and how people like Larry Cohen were geniuses in what they did, and how they did things on such a small budget and in such a small time frame, and turned a profit from these ludicrously cheap movies, and people would just come back for them. I mean, it's like that golden age of drive-in, exploitation, grindhouse, VHS, video library stuff has gone, but there are still people out there harking back to this sort of stuff. I mean, you've only got to look at recent films like The Void.
Yeah, true.
You know, where it's like that's got a much kind of Lovecraftian thing, but it's so deeply rooted in that kind of 80s aesthetic. Because people who obviously weren't born when these films came out, looking back and going, wow, this is like nothing I've ever seen, because it would be like nothing they've ever seen. Because there is no one really like Larry Cohen making stuff like this now. The nearest we have is probably Blumhouse, which is much more of a model on the Larry Cohen kind of school of filmmaking, where they go, right, you've got a fixed budget, where's your script? Okay, go for it, bring something back to me. And that's that. The Blumhouse films are a direct descendant from people like Larry Cohen and what they were doing and what they were making, within strict budgets, strict time frames, trying to get something out there that's going to catch the attention of a certain demographic and make enough money for them to make the next movie. these sort of films kind of informed me of stuff that I was going to find later in my life. Because when I was collecting videotapes when I was in my late teens and early 20s, I was just trying to find anything. Didn't care what it was. Like, if it was for sale, I'd buy it and then watch it and then find the directors and the actors that were in all these movies. And that's how I grew my appreciation for people like Larry Cohen.
Yeah, see, I understand that because my brother got really into Rick Baker and special effects because of his special effects in Thriller. And yeah. He is a lot younger than me, so came and was rewatching Thriller a long time after it was made because he was born just after it was made. So by the time he discovered it, that's how he kind of got this love of special effects. And I'm sure my mum thought she was going to go broke from buying him all the fake blood that she had to back in the day. But there was just something about those special effects in that particular long form video that he watched also on VHS that really affected him to the point where he wanted to give that a try. Whereas for me, when I saw it in real time, when it was released, it was, what is this American Werewolf in London? I went off on the totally other scheme of that, of I want to know what that film is that this director who directed Thriller has done over here, because there was a snippet of American Werewolf in London in Thriller, how it all got made and all of that. So I completely understand, like, it's what you kind of take from whatever it is that seems to be the thing that talks to you, that you always remember and sends you down a very probably dark garden path.
what I'm finding very interesting at the moment is there's all these kind of boutique labels that have come up over the past decade or so that are finding all these old movies and cleaning them up and putting them out on Blu-ray. So the next generation of people can find them. They'll put them out on Blu-ray and they'll end up on the streaming services at some point as well, I'm sure. I'm hoping that Shudder gets a hold in Australia, because that's like the kind of Netflix of horror. And they'll should have all these old movies on there as well. And it's like, I just love the fact that these films can find a new audience and people can find and do what I did when I watched them and laugh at them and go, well, that's ridiculous. How could that baby have fangs and teeth and be born? And that doesn't even look real, and have the same reaction to it that I did when I first saw it. You know, even though now people would have seen things like Ready Player One, which is just completely unreal to watch. Such an assault on you with the special effects and stuff. And maybe go back and then accidentally find It's Alive because they like the write-up that they've seen and sit there watching it going, no, this is the most ridiculous film I've ever seen, which is exactly the reaction I had when I first saw it. You may not like it the first time you see it, but then you might go back to it and see it again, or other films done by the same director, which is how I found Larry Cohen, was just seeing his name on the front covers of these super gaudy VHS tapes and just kind of going, yeah, that looks like something I want to watch. And watching it going, this is ridiculous. How stupid is this film? Oh, this is great. I need a copy of this. So, yeah, I think I enjoy reissues of older movies much more than I enjoy reissues of older music. I don't know. It's something that makes me happier about old films being discovered as opposed to old music being discovered. I think there's a different kind of quality with films and music. Not that I haven't gone out and bought reissues of stuff that I bought 30 years ago because it's come out on coloured vinyl or whatever and has been remastered. And I go, ooh, I must have that. So I think I've become that part of that generation that just rebuys everything on various different formats throughout the years and doesn't throw any of it away.
Well, Alex, I think it's also a case of with It Lives Again, you could just do the Larry Cohen swimming pool drinking game, because it does make another appearance in the opening credits of this film.